Yes.
We're in session. This is the afternoon session of the Portland City Council on Wednesday afternoon, February 7th, 2018. Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Udaly.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. The purpose of council meetings is to do the city's business, including hearing from the community on issues of concern. In order for us to hear from everyone and give due consideration to matters before the council, we must all endeavor to preserve the order and decorum of these meetings. To make sure the process is clear for everyone, I want to review some of the basic guidelines, which I hope will help everyone to feel comfortable, welcome, respected, and safe at the meeting to make sure that decorum is maintained. You should assume that people will come to the microphones who testify, and they will have a difference of opinion from you. It's not a good thing if a room this full, everybody agrees on everything. So the name of the game here is hear everybody out, listen with respect, do not interrupt. If you are a lobbyist, please disclose you are a lobbyist. If you're here representing an organization, that's helpful too. If there are people here who are part of a group and you all have similar concerns, it's okay. If you want to appoint a couple of people to make your case, and then you're free to come up and stand behind the individual representing your group. Sometimes people prefer that. People have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, you'll see a yellow light on the rostrum light up. When your time is up, you will see a red light. Please end your testimony at the red light. If there's any disruption, I will issue a warning that if there's any further disruption, anyone who's disrupting the meeting will be subject to ejection for the remainder of the meeting. If you're asked to leave and you don't, you're subject to arrest for trespass. That rarely happens, so we don't want it to happen, but those are the council rules. Before we get into today's item, I want to acknowledge some honored guests who are with us here today in the upstairs. We have Mr. Stephen Ying, and he is shepherding a group of eighth grade students from Beijing. So welcome to our campus. With that, Carla, will you please read this afternoon's hearing item?
Item 132, appeal of the South Burlingame Neighborhood Association against the hearing officer's decision to approve with conditions McAdam Ridge, a 21-lot subdivision, environmental review with modifications, and environmental violation review for vacant property west of and adjacent to 0319 Southwest Taylor's Ferry Road, LU16-213734 LDSENMEV.
Very good. Thank you, Carla. First, the city attorney will make some comments about the proceedings today.
Good afternoon. This is an on-the-record hearing. It means you must limit your testimony to materials and issue in the record. The order of testimony is as followed. We'll begin with a staff report by Bureau of Development Services for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present his or her case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes, although, as the mayor noted, council may amend the timing. The principal opponent, in this case the applicant, will have 15 minutes to address council and rebut the appellant's presentation. If there is no principal opponent, council moves on, but in this case we do. After the principal opponent, council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. And finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents to the appeal. Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter. There are several guidelines for those of you who are addressing council today. First, as I mentioned, the evidentiary record is closed. It's an on-the-record hearing. It's to decide only if the hearings officer made a correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. This means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer, You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the hearings officer. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. Council will not consider new information, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. Second, if you believe a person who addresses council today improperly presents new evidence or presents a legal argument relying on evidence not in the record, you may object to that argument. And you may either do so by coming and talking to me, and we'll create a list, or if during your testimony you may raise it. New issues. Under state law, only issues raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today not raised before the hearings officer, you may object to Council's consideration of that issue. And finally, the applicant must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If they fail to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow Council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in Circuit Court. And that concludes my remarks.
Very good. Thank you. Do any members of the Council wish to declare a conflict of interest? There are no conflicts of interest declared. Do any members of the Council have ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of this hearing to disclose?
Yes.
Commissioner Fritz.
I visited the site at the request of one of the neighbors before the application was submitted. I gave general advice such as review the approval criteria, don't be rude to people, and stay focused on the issues within the report. And I have not heard from or visited the site since.
Does anyone present in the council chambers wish to ask Commissioner Fritz about her ex parte contacts or information that she may have received? I see no one in the council chambers. Is there anybody else who'd like to declare an ex parte contact? There are no other commissioners who are declaring an ex parte contact. Have any members other than Commissioner Fritz made visits to the site involved in this matter? No other commissioners have made visits to the site under consideration. Do council members have any other matter that need to be discussed before we commence the hearing? There are no matters to discuss. With that, then, we'll call for testimony. We'll start with the staff report, approximately 10 minutes. Come on up. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Members. My name is Sean Williams, and I'm here today with...
I'm sorry, Sean, your mic is turned off. If you hit that gray button. Gray button. There you go.
Oh, there we go.
And stay about 6 inches away from it.
Good afternoon. My name is Sean Williams. I'm here with my colleague, Kate Green, as representative of Bureau of Development Services. We're here today to present an on-the-record appeal hearing for land use case file 16-213734. This review is for a subdivision, environmental review with modifications, and environmental violation review. Project's also known as McAdam Ridge. This first slide that you'll see here is of the zoning for the property. The property is in the red hash marks. The base zone for the property is R10. It's residential 10,000. Allows a maximum density of one lot per 10,000 square feet. The property is approximately 14 acres in size. Almost the entirety of the site is located within the environmental conservation and protection overlays, with the higher level protection overlays being located over the waterways that are on the site. There is a scenic corridor overlay that is present over Southwest Taylor's Ferry Road, and the site is entirely within the landslide hazard overlay. For some context, here we have an aerial photograph. The site is outlined in red and has primary frontage on Southwest Taylor's Ferry Road. Additionally, has frontage on Southwest Ruby Terrace and Southwest Hume Street. The site's located within the South Burlingame neighborhood. The South Portland neighborhood also borders the site to the north. One thing you'll notice here, the site's heavily wooded and traversed by both Stevens and Ruby Creeks. The site's adjacent to Riverview Abbey Mausoleum and across the street from the Riverview Cemetery. Other landmarks you'll notice here is I-5 to the north and the Willamette River to the east. So the map that you see here is of the preliminary subdivision plat. So the proposal is for 21 lots ranging in size from 5,000 to 7,924 square feet. Three tracts are also proposed to be created as well as listed here. The proposal also will create new public streets and a pedestrian connection. And in addition, new utilities will be extended on the site to serve the development in the form of water, sanitary sewer, and stormwater. In addition to the land division review, there's also an environmental violation review. This review is to resolve unauthorized work that occurred within the environmental zone that included cutting and topping of trees and shrubs, in addition to some ground disturbance. This review was found to be met, or the approval criteria found to be met, subject to replanting of the disturbed areas. Should be noted that there's no objections to approval of the environmental violation review noted in the appeal. So the hearings officer approved the decision for land division to create 21 lots, three tracts, new public streets. An environmental review was approved for the proposed disturbance area. Two environmental modifications were approved in addition to the environmental violation review. And these approvals were based on the approval criteria for land divisions in open space and residential zones, environmental review, environmental modifications, and corrections to violations. This decision was appealed by the South Burlingame Neighborhood Association for the following reasons, and I will go into these in more detail in the subsequent slides. The first being in regards to the issue of due process. What you'll see here is kind of a timeline of the review process. And here you'll see when the application was deemed complete, when a recommendation was made to the hearings officer, when the hearings occurred for this review as well. There were two opportunities provided to submit and address new information throughout this process, which were established at the discretion of the hearings officer. These timelines were in accordance with accepted practices. Unfortunately, there wasn't additional time to be provided for more opportunity to provide comments because we're at the end of the state-mandated timeline for land use reviews, which brings up my next point, that we need to make a decision on this appeal hearing today in order to abide by those timelines.
Could you tell me, please, what are the consequences of not abiding by those timelines?
I would like to defer to the city attorneys, if I could, on that.
Can you stop the clock, Carla, please?
An applicant has the opportunity, if the city doesn't abide by the 120-day timeline plus any extensions they've granted, to seek a writ of mandamus in circuit court. Through that, they could obtain approval of the application and attorney fees.
Thank you.
Can I just say, hasn't it been our practice in the past, if council needs more time to, if it determines it needs more time to deliberate, that we ask the applicant if they would consent to an extension?
We have. In this case, we're at a year plus. But yes, that has been council's practice in the past.
Okay, so moving on to the next appeal point is regarding the environmental review. So environmental reviews are what we do as a part of those is look at establishing the limits of disturbance for a proposal that presents the least amount of detrimental impacts to the resources on the site. Mitigation is then required to compensate for those impacts. What you'll see here in this slide is a picture of Ruby Creek, which is a location where stormwater will be discharged via an outfall. It's also the location of where a new sanitary sewer main will be connected. And then additionally, the plan that you see here is of the construction management plan, which identifies the limits of disturbance for the proposal. The decision found that this criteria could be met subject to conditions that would allow for final determination of disturbance area through permits associated with street and utility construction. And the appeal indicates that the proposal does not present the least amount of detrimental impacts to identified resources. The next appeal point is regarding environmental modifications. Some modifications to lot dimension standards or site-related development standards can be requested as a part of environmental reviews if it's found that they could provide greater protection of resources and, on balance, be consistent with the purpose of those regulations. What you'll see here in this picture is the proposed conceptual development plan for the lots. So two modifications were requested. The first is to reduce the minimum lot area for lots 9 through 23 from 6,000 to 5,000 square feet in area. And the second is to reduce the minimum side building setback for each lot from 10 to 5 feet. The decision found that this criteria could be met based on substantial conformance with the criteria. And the appeal indicates that the proposal does not provide greater protection of resources, at least in respect to the modification to setbacks for lots 3 through 8 based on those lots meeting the lot dimension standards for the zone. The next appeal point is for tree preservation. So tree preservation requirements apply to land division proposals. When there's a concurrent environmental review as a part of a proposal, then we're really, for the most part, looking at maximizing tree preservation to the extent practicable. What you'll see here in this picture is of the upland forest area on the site. You'll see a lot of mature trees in this area. The decision found that this criteria could be met, and the appeal is contending that tree preservation is not maximized to the extent practicable because the environmental review disturbance area is unresolved. The next appeal point is...
Sorry, and questions don't count against anybody's time here.
Sure.
What do you mean it's unresolved?
So the disturbance area is not exactly been worked out because there's still some technical issues as far as how the streets and utilities could actually be constructed. And so because we don't know whether or not it's feasible to construct what's proposed, we don't know how much disturbance area would be associated with that.
Okay, thank you. I'll hold my further questions on that till later.
Okay. The next appeal point is regarding landslide hazard overlay. The entire site is located within this overlay, and what this criteria requires is that you locate development on the most suitable portions of the site so as to limit the risk of a landslide. In order to address this criteria, the applicant provided geotechnical reports and landslide hazard studies, which found that would be no hazards generated from the proposal. The site development section of BDS reviewed these documents and concurs with those findings, and they're available today to answer any questions you may have. The appeal contends that the site is not suitable for development based on the presence of a historic landslide on the site. The final appeal point is regarding transportation impacts. So this criteria looks at evaluating the transportation system and ensuring that it's going to safely support the proposed development in addition to existing uses in the area, considering a number of evaluation factors. Some of the pictures you'll see here in the slides are of Southwest Taylor's Ferry Road, the top one being in more close proximity to the frontage of the site, and the bottom one being at the intersection of Taylor's Ferry and Southwest 2nd Avenue. You'll notice there's a TriMet bus stop in that location, and then across the street there is the entrance to Riverview Cemetery. Some of the issues that were identified throughout the review process in regards to the evaluation factors are for safety for all modes and the availability of transit. The decision found this criteria to be met subject to either adding or improving a transit stop and removal of some vegetation to improve site distance. This criteria is being appealed on the basis of lack of access to transit service on the south side of Taylor's Ferry Road. We additionally have Bureau of Transportation staff here today to answer any questions you might have on that. So the alternatives presented before you today are to deny the appeal and uphold the hearings officer's decision to approve the application with conditions. deny the appeal and uphold the hearings officer's decision to approve the application with modifications including revised conditions, grant the appeal and overturn the hearings officer's decision, thereby denying the application, and finally, to grant the appeal in part and overturn the hearings officer decision, thereby denying the application with exception of approval of the environmental violation review with conditions. Thank you for your time.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioner Fritz.
On slide two, if you could go back to slide two, please. Why isn't the light pink part of that of the entire property? Why isn't that part of the site?
So that is just that's indicating the property that's also owned.
But I thought that the definition of site means everything that's in the same ownership is contiguous.
Not for the purposes of a land division.
Okay. How was the determination of practicable made? You know, that this number of lots is the minimum number that makes the whole thing pencil.
I think you would have to have the applicant respond to that.
Okay, thank you. There was a condition about what the urban forester and the city engineer having to approve tree removal. What if they say no?
I suppose if they say no, then the proposal couldn't be approved.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And then I do have a question for transportation, either now or later. And that question is, why are half-street improvements on Taylor's Ferry not being, on the Taylor's Ferry frontage, why isn't the half-street improvement being required?
We are, Commissioner Fritz, Kurt Kruger with transportation, we are requiring half-street improvement, sidewalk improvement along the limited frontage. It still would leave a significant gap down to McAdam or up to the top of the hill to Boone's Ferry.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to ask, could you once again just explain what is the condition for developing in a landslide hazard area?
Basically, the criteria asks that you demonstrate that the site is suitable for development. And in order to do that, what we require is a landslide hazard study that is provided by an engineer and a geotechnical engineer. And basically, they are evaluating, you know, whether or not it is, the site is suitable for what is being proposed. And we do have our site development staff here that could go into further detail on that, too, if you'd like.
So if the applicant has a study by a geotechnical engineer that says you can do development in the site, even though it's a landslide hazard area, that satisfies the criteria?
It does, yeah. So the landslide hazard overlay is on pretty much over almost all of West Portland. You know, it's just an area that has a lot of these types of issues, so we ask for this kind of extra layer of review for these reviews.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm just curious, what, if any, impact is there on the Riverview natural area that may be relevant to our consideration?
You want me to speak to that? Hi, I'm Kate Green, for the record. We would anticipate that there wouldn't be any impact. The idea of the limits of disturbance is that there are no offsite or no impacts beyond those limits of disturbance.
So no stormwater runoff, no other detrimental impact to the sensitive streams and other habitat within the natural area?
In order to satisfy the approval criteria, they're supposed to delineate a limits of disturbance and demonstrate that they're not going to have any off-site impacts.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
We might call you back up later. The appellant, 10 minutes. And legal counsel, you will, of course, let us know if any of our questioning is not consistent with the standards you laid out at the beginning of the hearing. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Carrie Richter. I'm an attorney at the law firm Bateman Seidel. I'm here today representing the appellant, South Burlingame Neighborhood Association. I don't know if you need my office address, but it's 888 Southwest 5th Avenue, Suite 1200, 97204.
Typically, just so everybody knows, we don't need your address. Just name for the record, sufficient.
Just my
and
address.
Your affiliation.
This appeal raises two categories of issues. Questions of whether the hearings officer properly applied the applicable standards, and two, whether the applicant provided substantial evidence to show that these standards are met. The applicant continually focused on the substantial evidence issue, claiming that plans were revised by qualified experts as the process went on to reflect shortcomings as they were identified by staff, and they were submitted into the record. The staff didn't object. Voila, approval. And I think that what we've submitted to you in writing and the people here testifying today are going to show you that the criteria were not met in the first instance, putting aside the evidentiary challenges. Four of the seven city bureaus noted defects in the proposal throughout the process. The applicant will say that they didn't comment during the final period, so they must have been satisfied. I urge you to ask them whether or not they were satisfied by the materials that were submitted. Rushing to revise the proposal left staff and the public shortchanged in its opportunity to review, resulting in a design that was not fully considered or refined, compromising the environmental review. Examples of these shortfalls in evidence include failure to include riprap and rockery retaining walls and stormwater containment solutions within the area subject to disturbance. I believe Mr. Williams mentioned that determining where the roads will be will affect the area of disturbance. Until we know what the area of disturbance is, we cannot know whether the mitigation plan is sufficient. A couple of background facts that are essential to understanding this case, and Ms. Green mentioned them, so I won't delay the point, but we've talked about how this entire property is encumbered by various environmental protective zones. You've got the environmental protection area that protects the creeks themselves, and no development is allowed there. It will never be allowed there. The rest of the property is encumbered by a conservation area. The reason why this other area was encumbered by a conservation overlay zone is because of its upland forest. The Southwest Hills Resource Protection Plan identifies and maps the 4.57 acres subject to development as an upland forest area that is significant for its second growth stage forest cover that is home to over 60 birds and 30 mammal species. Therefore, the protected resources in this case are not just the streams, but the upland forest area as well, and that's why it's encumbered by EC. In contrast, the applicant identified three significant resources that are worthy of protection: Stevens Creek, Ruby Creek, and the forested area in the north section of the property. The reason for concluding that the northern one-third of the site, away from the riparian areas, was more significant than the forest areas on the rest of the site was not because of the forest characteristics. And it was not because of the wildlife that lives there. It was because the forest provides shade to Stevens Creek, which lowers the Stevens Creek temperatures. The functional value identified and acknowledged in the Southwest Hills Resource Protection Plan, the upland forest resources and the wildlife that call it home, were never given any value by this applicant or the hearings officer. The upland forest on the north side of the property was valuable for what it gave to the creek, and not for its own intrinsic value. As a result, this 4.57 acre upland forest is slated to be clear cut to accommodate a 21 lot development. The zoning code 33430.017 requires a design that will prevent harm to identified resources and functional values. Protection of the functional values of the valuable upland resource area required customizing and innovating the development to have the least impact on extensive timber resources. It required nestling the houses amid the forest rather than eliminating a large swath, 4+ acres, to accommodate a development. The hearings officer also erred by interpreting the obligation to have the, quote, least impact on protected resources based solely on the total percentage of overall disturbed land area, which they say is 29.5%. One of the environmental review criteria requires finding that the proposed development have the least significant detrimental impact based on a consideration of significantly different alternatives. all of the alternative considered focused solely on the percentage of disturbance impact. For example, in order to compare whether the disturbance area of 29.5 was an appropriate amount of disturbance, the applicant directed the hearings officer to other cases where the city has granted environmental review where disturbance limits were much higher. And in one of those cases, the impact area was greater than 29.5% in an upland forest area. But in that case, only 5 trees were removed. However, in this case, where the proposal is to remove 478 native mature trees between 6 and 54-inch diameter and another 3,326 trees at 13 inches or greater to be clear-cut. This illustrates that the obligation to have the least amount of detrimental impact should not rise or fall on the total disturbance area.
Ms. Richter, I'm sorry. Would you say that again?
Yes.
Last, what you just said. The number of trees, could you just go back two sentences and say that again?
Sure. This approval will result in the elimination of a total of 478 native mature trees and 3,326 trees of 13 inches or less.
Thank you.
Further, it's our position that using the term 29.9% as a basis for evaluating the limits in the disturbance area is subject to manipulation. The applicant's claim suggests that the site was otherwise developable. The EP zoning along the riparian quarry takes this area of land out of the total that could be considered. And so, again, if you took the EP-zoned land out of the total, the amount of land impacted would be higher. So, again, we have concerns that that 29.9% is not really, it's just subject to manipulation in the way you look at it. One of the points that Commissioner Salzman asked about was the question of landslides and erosion and what criteria. And I want to point out another criteria that I think is really relevant and distinguishes this case. The obligation for environmental review is preventing harm to resources. And the Southwest Hills Resource Protection Plan points out that site soils are prone to slide and slumps when saturated. At particular risk are the steep sloped ravines. Erosion caused by the failure of these slopes would negatively impact the habitat and the water quality. The applicant will respond to this claim explaining that their area was extensively tested and the development will reasonably limit the risk of landslide under Zoning Code 33632 that Mr. Williams talked about. But these studies failed to address and consider the significantly different alternatives, whether there were significantly different alternatives that would protect the functional values of the natural environment better to protect the wildlife and the upland forest from risk of landslide, which is specifically identified for protection in the Southwest Hills Plan. The alternatives, the applicant says it considered different access configuration, different lot configuration, different housing types, but they did not consider whether it was possible to preserve a significant grove, a particular wildlife habit, or a 200-plus-year-old 54-inch tree by customizing a development that would work with the trees and work with the forest and work with the wildlife. Finally, ZC 430.250A1C requires the provision of a mitigation plan which demonstrates that all significant detrimental impacts on resources and functional values will be compensated for. Again, the hearings officer and the applicant gave no value to the upland forest values that make up the Southwest Hills Plan and led to the EC zoning in the first instance. The mitigation plan was submitted by the applicant in January of 2017, before the hearings process commenced and before there were substantial changes in the proposal. The hearings officer's decision does not reflect changes to the mitigation plan resulting from, the hearings officer's decision does reflect changes to the mitigation plan resulting from the additional detail. But it doesn't talk about overall project mitigation, overall project overall protection of the forest generally. Coming back again to sort of the opening concern, the mitigation plan is deficient because the disturbance area was not known. The applicant recoils at the idea of setting disturbance areas, citing the need for flexibility. And generally, unknown construction activities happen, and you have to make adjustments. But the code clearly requires that an applicant within environmental review set a clear limitation on disturbance within resource areas. Clear limitations are not boundaries that are adjustable when it is convenient for the construction's crew. With this, I ask that you uphold this appeal and overturn the hearings officer's decision. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Perfect timing. Commissioner Fritz.
Do your clients have any opinion on whether the environmental violation review should be approved?
I think we would be fine with the mitigation that a city has identified.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Commissioner Fish.
If we're not clear about defining the disturbance area and we're building in a certain level of flexibility and we get it wrong, what's the remedy?
A loss of habitat, I think, is the remedy of getting it wrong. I mean, as far as an enforcement action, we've blessed it at that point.
Right.
We have signed off on it. That's why this is so dangerous.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Next up, supporters of the appeal. You can sign up. I believe the sign-up is still, it's in Carla's hands. Again, you don't have to use your full 3 minutes. If you want, you can just say, I agree with what the last person said, or you can say, I agree with the first 2 points and want to add one more. Or if you prefer, you can just stand behind whoever is representing your interests. You are, of course, entitled to your 3 minutes. I just want to suggest alternatives that people would prefer. Carla, how many people do we have signed up?
We have 35.
So,
36.
So,
37.
The question now is, how long do you want to sit here? So, if you start hearing testimony that sounds a lot like yours, just come up and say, my 3 points have already been made, but me too. Or whatever you'd like to say is sufficient. That's good. All right, first three, please.
Are Carol Hazard, Marilee Carr, and Matthew Boyes, and they'll be followed by Jan Friedman, Dave Polson, and Krista Peterson.
Again, name for the record. When your 3 minutes is up, the light goes off, and that is when I would like you to end your testimony. Thank you. Would you like to start for us, please, today?
Yes. My name is Carol Hazard. I live at 3232
Southeast. You'd ask if your address.
Pardon me?
Don't give your address.
Yeah, we don't need addresses.
Okay,
just name
good.
For the record is sufficient. Thank you.
All right. I've been a Portland resident for 52 years, living all that time on the east side. My husband and I lived in Alameda for 38 years. We have lived in the Reed neighborhood for the past 14 years, and our children and grandchildren live in Portland. As a concerned citizen, I recognize the need for new development in our city, but my greatest concern is that development should be safe and in the best interest of all citizens. It is my opinion that this development will put hundreds of people and their homes at risk. Hearings Officer Odin Orr failed to apply Code 33.632.100 that states that the development site must be suitable for development in a manner that reasonably limits the risk of a landslide affecting the site and adjacent sites. He did not give nearly enough credence to the known factors that reactivate landslides. This decision clearly puts families at risk. The State of Oregon's Guide to Landslides states the presence of previous landslides is one of the biggest and most obvious risk factors for recurrent landslides. This site is a translational site, which is commonly triggered by heavy rain, rapid snow melt, earthquakes, grading, removal material from bottom of slope, adding loads to the top of the slope, concentrating water onto a slope as with landscape irrigation, roof downspouts, or broken water sewer lines. Essentially, 5 of the 7 points to avoid reacting a landslide will occur with the McAdam Ridge development. They are upland forest that stabilizes the ground overlaying the landslide, will be clear-cut, and will be replaced with impervious surfaces that will concentrate water on the slope. Land will be graded and cut from the bottom. 20,000 cubic yards of infill will be added as a load to the slope. Tons of building material will add to the load and will create impervious surfaces which will concentrate water on the slope. Since there is no mitigation for uphill groundwater, water will be concentrated even more on the slope. The applicant has chosen to place this nearly 5-acre development on the most unstable ground they own, an ancient landslide. And to add insult to injury, their plan completely removes all the existing stabilization from the nearly 500 big trees and thousands of small trees that will be clear-cut. There are nearly 15 acres on the site, and the applicant never considered an alternative that would have completely avoided this large, high-risk hazard. The hearings officer should have weighed the considerable risk thoroughly before approving this development, because the environmental codes for Type 3 land divisions required the significant detrimental impacts are to be used for the development. Therefore, I believe the subdivision application should be denied.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Mayor Wheeler and city councilors, my name is Marilee Carr. I am the team leader of the Neighborhood Emergency Team, or NET, in South Burlingame, the neighborhood of the proposed development. My concerns are my own. I do not speak for the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management, which runs the NET program.
However, thank you for your participation. We appreciate that very much.
Sure. NET members are volunteers trained by Portland Fire and Rescue as amateur first responders. We can and will be on the scene of disaster before professionals with heavy equipment arrive. As I assess hazards around my neighborhood, I look at houses set on slide-prone ground as coffins. These houses on unstable land that has slid before will sooner or later give way in a big rainstorm or an earthquake. Building the proposed development will further increase the precariousness of this slope by removing the trees whose roots are now holding the soil in place. NETs are trained to extract people from rubble, but not from mud. If you allow these coffins to be built, my team will be there when they slide, trying to save our neighbors' lives and living ever afterward with memories of partial success, if any. My neighborhood holds other coffins, too, structures that pose extreme seismic danger. They are homes built of unreinforced masonry, or URMs. They will collapse in a strong earthquake, threatening lives both inside and outside the house with a rain of bricks. No one can build URMs anymore because Portland's seismic vulnerability has literally made itself felt. Our vulnerability to landslides is also well established, but more recent. In February 1996, heavy rain and snowmelt caused 700 landslides in Metro Portland with major damage to more than 100 homes. Building on landslides should be as unthinkable as building unreinforced masonry. I hope you agree and vote to stop this ill-considered and dangerous development. Thank you for the opportunity to explain our concerns.
Thank you for your testimony. Good afternoon.
Hello, Mayor Wheeler and City Council members. My name is Matthew Boys, and I'm a resident of South Burlingame. Thank you for taking the time to hear our Neighborhood Association's appeal. The SBNA has been working as an engaged group to positively influence this land division for many years without success. We have serious concerns we will share with you today, but the most grave is in regards to the landslide and traffic safety. Devastation to the habitat and wildlife in the proposed land subdivision and the value of its unique resources will be articulated today. Out of respect to you and your time, we have prepared and organized our testimonies to be as succinct as possible. We have asked people to allow a few of us to express all of our concerns as a collective, and with many more showing their solidarity behind us today. While we are not opposed to developing this property, we feel the current application has too many risks. Our goal is to share with you evidence and testimony that should compel you to deny the McAdam Ridge application, as Riverview Abbey did not meet the burden of proof required by Mr. Odin Orr to approve the application. And these are going to the clerk.
Good.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm Shannon. I'm part of the SBNA. I'm helping to navigate the PowerPoint for our group. Is it possible? I've expanded it, but it doesn't appear to be showing on the video.
There it is. There, I fixed it for you. I hope you're happy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very good.
He is the mayor, after all.
You're good.
And if it breaks again, I've delegated the duty to Carla over there, because she's really the genius here. Very good. Thank you for your testimony.
The next three are Jan Friedman, Dave Polson, and Krista Peterson. And they'll be followed by Carol Lidberg, Lorraine Zunwalt, and Scott Richman.
Okay. And just so I understand the logistics of what you're proposing, that legal counsel understands what you're proposing, you're still going to stay within your 3 minutes. But while you are testifying, there will be a PowerPoint. Is that correct?
Correct. We will. We have 23.
Can you speak into the microphone?
Sorry.
And if you could just identify yourself again, please.
My name is Shannon Hiller-Webb. I'm part of South Burlingame Neighborhood. We have 23 people representing our neighborhood in our narrative, so the PowerPoint will follow the entire 23 pieces of testimony.
Okay, very good. And you have no problems with that, legal counsel, I assume?
My sense is this is unusual, so I'd be interested what legal counsel says.
So I'm assuming that it's probably more efficient rather than having each individual person click on the button for their slides. So I'm assuming that what she's doing is providing technical assistance, as we might when we have presentations by staff members. So I don't consider the slides to be Shannon's testimony. I'm assuming it relates to the testimony, and I also assume that both staff and the applicant will let me know if there's any new evidence that shows up in the PowerPoint.
Very good. So we counsel then we will rely on the city attorney if there's something that isn't in accordance with the hearing structure to let us know. Very good. Thank you. Sorry for the delay.
No problem. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Jan Friedman, and I'm a member of the South Burlingame Neighborhood Association. I've lived on. Is there a problem with the sound?
Okay.
Oh, one second, Jan. Let's make sure we get
Shannon, is that what's supposed to be up there right now?
Yeah, this is Jan Friedman.
Okay.
So we don't. Is it your intent that we'd actually? Oh, I see. Okay, sorry.
I was just waiting for
her to finish anything.
So,
okay. Okay, so I've.
We screwed you up. Do you want to start over?
Yeah. Okay. I am still Jan Friedman, and I've lived in the Southwest Burlingame neighborhood for the last 19 years. I live on Southwest Ruby Terrace. I live in the landslide zone, and I'm part of South Burlingame Neighborhood Association. I've been a citizen of Portland for 30 years, and I've been a practicing attorney in the civil rights arena mostly for the last 28 years. I'm here to ask you to deny this application and overturn Mr. Odin Orr's decision. There are many bases for this. The one I'm going to address is due process, which, as you recognize, is a fundamental constitutional right that all of us share in this country. It involves notice and opportunity to be heard. It also interfaces, in this case, with the Administrative Procedures Act, which says that the officer presiding at the hearing shall ensure that the record developed at the hearing shows a full and fair inquiry into the facts necessary for consideration of all issues properly before the presiding officer in the case and the correct application of the law to those facts. That's ORS 183.417 sub 8. So there have been numerous instances where our due process rights were violated.
Sorry.
Thanks, Carl.
Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah,
okay.
Please.
One of them was on October 30th, we showed up for the hearing, and hundreds of pages of information were given to us. We were pro se, and a lot of key information was given at that 11th hour. Now, the applicant will say this is a four-year process, but we have neighbors who aren't represented getting hundreds of pages of documents with 1 week to respond. Mr. Odenora at that time said, I wish I could give you more time, but he didn't. But later through an interim order, provide some additional time, but that was over the Thanksgiving holiday, and it was on the 20th, starting the 20th. So we were really not able to mobilize and to get information in a way that would be meaningful. He also violated our due process rights. If you look at the decision, 100 pages, we are listed on the last page in the exhibit. We're listed for oral testimony, although I'm not listed on October 16th, even if I did provide oral testimony on that day. And we're listed on page 10, which is a cite to the Bureau of Developmental Services, quoting a synopsis of some of what we had to say. And that was from October 16th. The matter didn't end on October 16th. So basically, we were ignored in his decision. Mr. Odenor looked at the applicant, looked at the bureaus, looked at the applicant, and said, okay, I go with the applicant, and I'm going to add some conditions. So what that did was it excluded us from being heard. Where are we in there? Where's the substance? There's really no substance provided in terms of what the 86 written testimonies were and all the oral testimonies were. Thank you for your consideration in this important and complex matter.
Thank you. You bet. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is David Polson. I'm the senior principal engineer for Pace Engineers in Lake Oswego. We're a company of about 80 total consultants, focusing mainly on land use planning, civil engineering, and environmental engineering. We were retained by the South Burlington Neighborhood Association to provide an oversight of this development application. And I want to read from an email that I wrote after, and I'll explain later why I wrote this email. Per our scope of services, Pace Engineers was retained to review publicly available documentation submitted for McAdam Ridge and offer our opinions regarding whether it was consistent with the development code. Moreover, we understood that through the course of the McAdam Ridge entitlement process, SBNA was seeking professional services that could review and respond to engineers and consultants that the developer has retained. It is common and reasonable for SBNA to retain these professional services to provide knowledgeable and qualified responses, as would be appropriate for any Type 2 or Type 3 land use process. When Pace agreed to provide these services, it was with the understanding that we could develop an open and productive dialogue with the City of Portland and with a developer in the interest of gaining an understanding of all perspectives and representing the interests of SBNA. Public comments provided by SBNA members and others, including peer-to-peer exchange among professionals, should not only be freely encouraged, but strongly desired by all parties as an important aspect of facilitating a comprehensive entitlement process. That's the introduction. Then we just began our services. We did a couple $1,000 cursory review of the project, and then we attended one of South Burlington Neighborhood Association's meetings to discuss the project. I had a couple of consultants, an engineer and environmental planner, attend that meeting and offer their initial comments about what they had from their initial review. After that meeting, we got a letter. I received an email from Mr. Griffiths, the developer, that says this. It says, my family owns the property in Southwest Portland that is being developed for McAdam Ridge Housing. I've got much time. I'll skip the introduction. I attended the SBN meeting last night at Capitol Hill School. During that meeting, you both heavily criticized McAdam Ridge development. I'm very troubled by your statements. My development partners and I invested over $500,000 over a period of 4 years to obtain entitlements on the property. We've been damaged by your actions. You illegally obtained information by trespassing on our property. Our property is posted with no trespassing signs. You slandered the engineers and consultants that we hired from McAdam Ridge. You made multiple inaccurate statements. Sorry, my time's expired, but I'm saying that I think you would have heard a lot more today had I been retained and didn't have this intimidating email sent to us.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Krista Peterson. I'm an 18-year resident on Ruby Terrace, and I am a member of the South Burlingame Neighborhood Association. I am here today to express extreme concern about the transportation impact approval criteria 33.641.020 and 030 on the surrounding neighborhood and thoroughfares for our citizens. To begin, a few facts that are widely acknowledged and accepted regarding Taylor's Ferry, where the McAdam Ridge development is fronted and observations to evidence presented. Taylor's Ferry Road is unsafe for pedestrians, bicyclists, and mass transit riders due to limited sight distance, blind spots, and a lack of methods to safely cross the street. Taylor's Ferry has no roadway shoulders, only drainage ditches on both sides of the street. There are no sidewalks or curbs present on Taylor's Ferry except small portions intermittently placed at business fronts. There are no sidewalks from bus stop to bus stop. The intersections at Southwest 2nd and Taylor's Ferry and Southwest Terwilliger and Taylor's Ferry currently do not meet City of Portland operation standards. The 2015 traffic counts submitted by the applicant do not reflect true traffic flow because Selwood Bridge traffic was non-existent due to the closure and long-term sewer work was being completed on the Terwilliger Boulevard extension. Taylor's Ferry is massively overburdened during morning and evening rush hours at the intersections of Terwilliger Boulevard to the west and McAdam Avenue to the east, making access in and out of the neighborhood difficult. The adjacent neighborhood populations do support transit. Consistently low ridership is due to lack of access and unsafe nature of these locations. PBOT has denied this application for reasons that remain unaddressed by the applicant. It should be noted, a devastating crash occurred February 17, 2016, whereby a pedestrian was struck not once but twice by passing vehicles after exiting a TriMet bus while attempting to cross Taylor's Ferry from the south side. In this case, the teen narrowly escaped death and is still rehabilitating to this day. I shudder to think that a death is required before any action is taken. These facts are undeniable. Hearings Officer Odin Orr did not correctly apply the following code criteria: availability of transit service and facilities and connections to transit, and impacts on the immediate and adjacent neighborhoods. At this time, all eastbound bus stops along Taylor's Ferry should be considered unusable for those on the north side of Taylor's Ferry until there is a safe way for pedestrians to cross the street. The south side of Taylor's Ferry has no residences, only a cemetery and green space. All pedestrians would come from the north side of the road. TriMet's published bus stop guidelines referenced in Michelle Weifel's October 25, 2017 communication with Mr. Kobach state, it is essential that bus riders have safe access to their bus stop walking on narrow roadway shoulders through mud or puddles or through ditches is unacceptable to most riders and is often unsafe. I'm going to run out of time, so... Mr. Kobach's assertion that the evidence of TriMet's response to this issue is critical, based on Weifel's assessment that a full sidewalk along Taylor's Ferry is not necessary, is contradictory. If TriMet does not hold responsibility for construction or maintenance of sidewalks or curb ramps, why would this opinion be critical? Has anyone even visited the site in this past year? The intersection of Southwest 2nd Taylor's Ferry is completely inaccessible.
Thank you. Next three, please.
Are Carol Lidberg, Lorraine Zumwalt, and Scott Richmond? And they'll be followed by Shannon Hiller-Webb, Dave Hennington, and Robert Lennox.
Good afternoon.
Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, my name is Carol Lidberg, and my family has lived on Southwest Ruby Terrace for more than 15 years. I am also part of the South Burlingame Neighborhood Association and strongly oppose this decision by the hearings officer. I would like to speak briefly about safety for all modes. That means pedestrians, bicycles, cars, and transit users should have equally safe passage on our city streets. While other areas and streets of Portland are maybe more significant for their accident rates and challenges in Southwest Taylor's Ferry, that does not diminish the factors that currently exist on this section of the road and will only get worse with this construction unless the applicant is forced to follow code and reflect necessary changes in their design proposal. The Griffith family business is adjacent to Taylor's Ferry, and I'm sure one or more of them spend time in the building. However, they still do not live in the neighborhood like most of us speaking today. And when the development is built, they still won't, but we will. The applicant needs to be held to the letter of the code and make necessary changes in concert with TriMet and PBOT to the access points of this development with both Taylor's Ferry and Ruby Terrace neighborhood. They've been given ample time to do so, more than 4 years, and still have not made the appropriate effort. There are no consistent sidewalks. Bicycle riders are forced to ride in the travel lanes and cut through the Riverview Cemetery. And the lack of development along this area makes speeds increase and elevation changes and curves equal hazard all around. The best we can hope for at this time are some improvements to the transit access. The final decision does require the applicant to trim bushes and prepare a pad for the stop on the new sidewalk, but we don't feel that is enough to make the road safe for pedestrians. At the very minimum, we ask that a crosswalk be included in the requirements for safe crossing from the eastbound bus stop to the proposed development on the west side of the street. Taylor's Ferry is dangerous for all modes of transportation today and will remain dangerous if McAdam Ridge is allowed to happen. My hope is that the Riverview Abbey Mausoleum and the Griffiths consider people's lives above profit in pursuit of this development. The irony of this statement is chilling. Living right next door to the mausoleum could be a constant reminder of a life cut short. In concert with PBOT, I ask that you deny this application and reverse the hearing officer's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name's Lorraine Sumwalt. Mayor, we